first win of the 2025 men's basketball NCAA tournament goes to Alabama State, beating St. Francis 70-68 due to some late game heroics, a full court heave that led to a missed shot off the backboard that was put back and in for the game winner. And you were telling me during the break, JT, that was the first NCAA tournament win in program history for Alabama State. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is the first ever NCAA tournament win for the Hornets. And I don't want to hear, oh, that's not a tournament win. That is a tournament win. I don't care what you say. I still think the first four is a tournament game. You're playing for your life. Win or go home.
Exactly. And I tell you who definitely counts it as an NCAA tournament win, the SWAC, the Southwest Athletic Conference, because they will get a share of the revenue now that Alabama State has won a game of the NCAA tournament. That is a huge boon for the league, knowing that their automatic qualifier got some semblance of success in the field of 68.
You know, talking about that, just think about when FDU beat Purdue, all that money they would get for that conference is insane.
Yeah.
Because they won two games that year because they were in the 16 playing game too.
Yep, that's correct. They were the first, and they were the first one to ever do that, right? University of Maryland, Baltimore County, UMBC, they beat Virginia several years ago, but that was the straight up 1-16. UMBC wasn't a part of the first four. So Fairleigh Dickinson to go from in the play-in round to then beating Purdue was massive. Their head coach just got their former head coach of that team, Tobin Anderson.
Yeah, he was fired.
Just got fired at Iona after a year.
It was second season.
It was second season.
But he took them to the championship game. He took Iona to the championship game.
Yeah, they.
He had big shoes to fill though. That was where Pitino was.
Yeah, dude. What? Like you? I don't get it. Like he went. He didn't have bad. I mean, he went 16-17 and 17-16 in 2 years in Iona. Did you expect him to be Rick Pitino? Like, did you really expect the same level of success? Have you become Rick Pitino was at Iona that long that you guys became that unbelievably delusional that you thought, oh, I can't do it in 2 years. Well, we need somebody else in there. Bro, what are you doing? What are you doing? Don't do this to yourselves. Tobin Anderson was a great D2 coach. He was at St. Thomas Aquinas in D2 and took him to the NCAA tournament every single year from 2015 to 2021. They got to the Sweet 16 three times, and they got to the Elite Eight once. Good years there, too, but, I mean, he's 41 years old. He'll find another mid-major job, I'm sure, somewhere.
Yeah, I think I saw something on Twitter, like, not all the information I'll ever get out about what really happened, and I was like, uh-oh.
Okay, all interesting. Right. And now we all wait around for the next game to start here in about 5 minutes, San Diego State against North Carolina at the UD Arena in Dayton, Ohio.
Do you like them being played in Dayton?
I got no problem with them being played in Dayton.
Right, yeah. I think Dayton's a great middle spot because...
Yeah,
I
centrally like, located.
Exactly.
Right? It pushes more towards the East Coast than the West Coast, I would say, certainly. San Diego State's got to travel, I think, a considerable ways further than North Carolina does for this game. But all in all, I think having it sort of centrally located in the Midwest of sorts, not a bad spot for it.
Now, what I don't understand is why only one of these games, which is the one we just watched, has to play on Thursday. The other three are playing on Friday. Why are you not making the winner of this game play on Thursday as well if you're going to make one of them play on Thursday? It makes no sense to me.
I don't know, man. I don't claim to know how the logistics and the scheduling of the NCAA tournament works at all. But unfortunately, we all got to sit here and watch North Carolina play in 5 minutes. Although somebody did recommend during the 6 o'clock hour that if you wanted to, you could go watch the Wichita State game instead. They're playing in the NIT. If you want to boycott the fact that North Carolina got into the field of 68, which is a complete catastrophe, dumpster fire, terrible decision making. And it's all because North Carolina's AD is the head of the committee, whether they want to admit to it or not, because they always say that, like, oh, well, you know, when they have conversations about North Carolina and their resume and should they be in the field, North Carolina's athletic director is required to leave. He's the head of the committee. Whether he's in the room or not, his impact is felt. He's the head of the committee. It's hard for those guys to have a conversation. I believe it was Fran Fraschilla. I read his, put it out on Twitter. Like, even if he's not in the room, it's hard for those guys to ignore that the athletic director at North Carolina is the head of the committee. And what it means for him if they're in the field versus if they aren't. They've got relationships with them. They might be friends, like close friends at this point, because they're on a committee of this magnitude with the NCAA tournament. It has an impact. Whether he is sitting in that conference room or sitting on that in the Zoom meeting or whatever it is, and they're having these discussions, whether he's there or not, they can't talk about North Carolina without immediately thinking of him, because he's in charge of the whole kit and caboodle. He's in charge of the whole thing. This doesn't make any sense.
Hey, what if we put UNC in? Maybe he'll give us a little extra money. Hey, like it's so funny. Oh, he wasn't in the quote-unquote meeting. I don't believe that. I mean, I believe it, but still, there's going to be that headspace, like you said. Also, I was listening to a podcast, and it had two CBS guys on it, and they go, the one time I actually started thinking UNC was going to be in the tournament was on Saturday night. We got an email saying that the UNC AD was going to be on the show with the commissioner of the NCAA when we do the questioning. And that they were like, that kind of gave us a suspect of maybe UNC is going to be in. Why would he's never been in the room before with the questioning? Why is he going to be in the room now? So that started turning the heads for CBS a little bit.
Man, I just don't understand. Like, I mean, I get it to some extent. Like, right, you don't want, like, the AP voters putting together the field of 68. I understand. But I don't like the idea of this sort of insider trading feel of having athletic directors and presidents being a part of these committees, whether it's the college, you know, the NCAA tournament or the college football playoff. I don't like it. And I say that as somebody who, for a long time there, Iowa, the University of Iowa's athletic director, Gary Barta, was the chair of the college football playoff committee. I don't like it. And when it comes to the NCAA tournament, like, we've got dudes like Jerry Palm and Joe Lunardi, dudes who just, that is their job. Like,
they're not good at it, but that is their job.
That's all they do. That's all these guys do is watch college basketball and do bracketology. Get a committee of like 16 of those guys together, bury them in a room for a couple of weeks and have them hammer out the details of the NCAA tournament field. I would much rather see that than see athletic directors and presidents and whoever else with their own agendas pushing their opinions on other stuff here. It's ridiculous.
I saw a tweet. It was Bracket Matrix did 111 brackets. Out of 111 brackets, guess how many West Virginia was in?
All 111.
Exactly. How many were North Carolina in?
27?
Yep.
Or 25?
27.
Yeah.
Now, that make that call. Like, I couldn't believe West Virginia wasn't in. I'm okay saying Indiana's not in. But taking West Virginia out and then using the excuse, oh, well, DeVry wasn't playing. He hasn't played since December.
He played in 8 games. Like, they played the entire Big 12 schedule and finished in the top half of a really loaded Big 12 without their best player.
They beat Kansas in Allen Fieldhouse without him. I don't get this whole nonchalant, oh, well, he's injured. It's not like it was Jordan Travis for Florida State. He broke his leg. He was out. We never got to see him play. I totally understood that one.
I vehemently disagreed with that
decision.
You
disagreed with that?
I disagreed with it.
I saw more of a reason with it than this one, I'm saying.
I would say yes. I would say there's more of a reason there.
I was still upset with the one with Florida State because I thought they earned that because they won those games. And you're going to take it away because of one player?
They won the games that were on their schedule. They won all 13 of their games.
Right.
Yes, you lost your Heisman Trophy finalist quarterback in Jordan Travis. I get it. But they still deserve to get in over an Alabama or a Georgia that year.
Right.
Just my opinion on the matter.
And to me, it shows when you put UNC over West Virginia, what's it matter in the quad one? We talk about quad one and quad two wins and how important they are. You went 1-14 in quad one?
1-13 in 14 quad one opportunities.
And you beat two
horrendous
whole tournament teams, including a 16 seed.
Yeah. Bad. It's a so terrible decision. And it's funny, you know, by a strange, interesting twist of fate, you mentioned that North Carolina got into the field over other notable bubble teams like Indiana and West Virginia, and now they will be forever linked by the fact that North Carolina got in ahead of them. They're also going to be forever linked by a decision that was announced today. Darian DeVries, who is the head coach, or was the head coach at West Virginia, has been named as the next head coach at Indiana. He's getting a 6-year deal with the Hoosiers. He was with West Virginia for only a single season this past year when they went 19-13 after he had a ton of success at Drake. And it's weird. Like the time is a construct. The world, the way that society works is a flat circle. It's so strange. So Darian DeVries is at Drake. He goes to West Virginia. Now he's going to Indiana. The thought yesterday, all the news, all the reports were saying that Darian DeVries was all but a shoe-in to get the Iowa job. It's interesting, you know, he grew up in the state of Iowa. He played at Northern Iowa, coached at Drake, and his younger brother, actually, Jared DeVries, was an All-American defensive end at Iowa, played late in the Hayden Fry era into the beginning of Kirk Ferentz's tenure at the University of Iowa. And so they're a Hawkeye family, grew up rooting for the Hawks, and that's always been a job that he kind of coveted. So the thought was, all the indications pointed to Darian DeVries returning to the state of Iowa where he grew up and coaching the team that he grew up rooting for. Ends up not being the case. I think that, at bottom line, NIL played a major factor in this decision. Indiana has a ton of resources. Obviously, they're a program with a lot of prestige and a lot of history, although none of it real recent. So that was kind of fascinating. Now, as an Iowa guy, right, has been paying attention to this for a long time, the sights are now set on the replacement for Darian DeVries at Drake as the front runner for the Iowa job, and that is Ben McCollum. Of course, JT, I see you smirking over there because you know I'm obviously a Ben McCollum guy, because before taking over at Drake this season, Ben McCollum was the head coach of the 4-time national champion
Northwest Bearcats.
I'm going to need you to say that with a little bit more fervor, all right?
Fine. Northwest Missouri State Bearcats.
Thank you very much. I just needed a little bit more gumption from you. You're darn right. So I love this, dude. Like, it's
going right for you, and it's going so bad for my good friend Jacob Elliott, who is a Northwest fan, who also is a Mizzou fan, who loves Ben McCollum, and also is a Cyclone fan who cannot understand it.
Okay, I have questions.
Yeah, I can't wait to answer
these. So, did he go to Northwest? Okay. So he went to Northwest. That's the Bearcat connection. My question, more than any of the others, how is he both a Mizzou fan and an Iowa State fan? So, how exactly are those two things seem mutually exclusive and that can't be paired together? How does that work?
So he's a Mizzou fan because we're from Missouri. We grew up Mizzou fans. He then is a huge, I'm going to say it wrong, he's like a horse veterinarian.
Okay, yeah.
And so he bought a horse up by Iowa State.
Okay.
And the person he bought it from took him to an Iowa State game, and he loved the Iowa State fans.
Was it a basketball game or a football game?
It was a football game.
Okay, Jack Trice.
Yeah. And so he fell in love with it, and he thinks they're the coolest. He would rather go up there to watch sports events. Like, so when they would have basketball, he would try to go to both Northwest and then hit Iowa State up. Mm. So he likes it both. He's hurting because Gilbert's out for Iowa State for the tournament.
Right.
And he's worried about that. But yeah, he loves where Ben McCollum is now, and he's not going to love it when it comes to Iowa.
Oh man, dude. I would be so unbelievably thrilled if that ends up being
my question to you is, I think Bill Self retires in the next 2 to 3 years. Okay.
Okay.
If he retires, I think Kansas calls Ben. I would not be surprised.
I mean, I'm sure if he goes to Iowa and they have immediate success, every blue blood program in the country is going to be calling him. Every SEC program, every Big 12 program with a ton of money to throw at this problem. You know, say that Calipari's at Arkansas for another couple of years and it continues to be ho-hum and they're an 8 seed, a 9 seed, a 10 seed, and you're thinking, okay, this isn't great. Arkansas is going to throw a ton of money at him. If there's one thing I know about Ben McCollum, it's that loyalty is a very, very important thing for him. He was loyal to Northwest Missouri State for a very, very long time. And I'm not making this up. I didn't hear this from somebody else. I was within 30 feet of Ben McCollum on multiple occasions and heard him turn down Division I head coaching jobs right in front of me.
Oh, yeah. He turned them down multiple times.
I heard it. I heard him turn down Division I head coaching jobs. I won't mention specific programs, but I heard it.
As a UCM fan, that hurt because we wanted him out of the MIAA.
I'm sure everybody did. And there were a lot of programs that came calling every year, but he didn't want to leave Northwest unless it was the right opportunity for him. And I had always heard, and I heard it from him, and I heard it from people around him, the jobs that he most highly coveted outside of like high major D1 jobs were Drake and Missouri State. And of course, I've been down in Springfield for the past 4 years prior to moving up here at the beginning of the year. And when Missouri State fired Dana Ford last season, I began the push immediately for Missouri State to go after Ben McCollum. And there were a lot of other people down in Springfield who were pushing and advocating for that same thing, that I thought Mac would be a tremendous fit for Missouri State. And the guys that he could bring with him from Northwest, I thought could be immediate impact guys, guys like Bennett Sturts, for example. Well, Missouri State, with an outgoing athletic director, sort of like his final homage to Missouri State, hires Konzo Martin. After bringing in Ben McCollum for an interview, and everybody kind of fell in love with him and his vision and what his production has been like in D2, they went with Konzo Martin, a guy who is a high-profile name, coached at Mizzou, coached at Cal, went to a Sweet 16 with Tennessee, and coached at Missouri State previously. Well, because of that, the domino effect continues. Ben McCollum ends up at Drake. They're 30-3, or 29-4, or whatever
they're
the record
30-3.
Is. Yeah. They went 15-3 in the Missouri Valley Conference, finished first in the league, won the regular season title and the conference championship. Any guesses on where Missouri State finished in the Valley this year?
They finished dead last.
Dead last. 3-15. The complete reason, inverse.
The only reason I know that is because Mizzou fans keep bringing up how Drake was playing down to Missouri State, the worst team in the Missouri Valley. They went to overtime in both games, and it was so close. And I'm like, I could care less. Ben McCollum is a great fit for Iowa for this one reason. He fits the offensive profile the football team is. Slow, grind you out, going to wear you down. It's so slow and methodical.
But see, again, I disagree with you. This year, yes, Drake has one of the slowest paces of play of any team in college basketball this year. Ben McCollum has not always been that way. Mac is phenomenal at his ability to recognize what his team's strengths are and what their weaknesses are, right? Certain coaches have a philosophy and this is what we're running and that's it, right? I'll harken back to the Iowa Hawkeyes in men's basketball. Fran McCaffrey, his system was run and gun. Get shots up, get out in transition. It was a up-tempo, fast break style of offense and they scored a ton of points. But it was like a piece of Swiss cheese trying to guard. I mean, they couldn't guard anybody. So many holes on the defensive side of the basketball. So, what Ben McCollum did at Drake this year was really slow the pace down. But I saw his teams at Northwest who got up and down, played with a ton of pace. They played elite offense. And they also could slow it down. He is a savant when it comes to the X's and O's of the game of basketball. The one thing about Ben McCollum's teams at both Northwest and at Drake that always translates, they play incredibly disciplined defense. They defend. And I would love to see that at the University of Iowa because Fran McCaffrey's teams did not defend. They were fun to watch. They scored a ton of points, but they didn't win as much as maybe they should have because of the pace in which they played and the lack of effort on defense because of how much effort they were putting in on the offensive side of the basketball. Will it happen? God, I hope so, dude. I mean, again, like I said, Ben McCollum is so incredibly loyal and was at Northwest for far longer than he should have been. He would probably be a high major. He would have been a high major D1 coach 3 years ago if he would have made the leap to D1 when coaches started calling. But he wanted to find the right program at the mid-major level. He wasn't going to become an assistant coach at a high major school. He didn't want to do that. He wanted to stay a head coach. And so I think the change from Drake to Iowa is eye-opening for a variety of reasons. Number one, it's not that far. I mean, that's not that big a stretch to go from Des Moines to Iowa City. You're within the state. You're in the state that you grew up in. You know, his kids are in high school. He's got two boys in high school right now. I can't remember exactly what their ages are. I think one might be a senior this year. So, you know, moving them would be unfortunate. But again, I just think going from Des Moines to Iowa City, not that big a stretch. He was actually born in Iowa City. Ben McCollum was. He didn't grow up in Iowa City. He grew up in Storm Lake, but he was born in Iowa City and grew up an Iowa fan. And it's the Big Ten. It's going from the Missouri Valley to the Big Ten. It's the highest level of basketball that there is, right? It's high major Division I basketball. The only step up is a blue blood program like a Kansas or a Duke or a North Carolina or a Kentucky or a UCLA or even an Indiana, which he was under consideration for. His name got thrown around a lot for the Indiana job before they ultimately settled on DeVries today. And then it's the NBA.
And you know Iowa, if you get Ben McCollum, you're getting Sturts. You're going to get Bennett Sturts. Bennett Sturts is going to follow his head coach.
Yes, he is. And this feels like a move for Ben McCollum that he's 41 years old. This feels like the kind of move where if Iowa lands Ben McCollum, he could be their coach for the next 20 years. I mean, he could be at Iowa for a very, very long time if he is successful, which I have no doubt that he will be.
Yeah, when Mizzou fired Konzo Martin, there was a lot of people wanting Ben McCollum. The problem with Missouri was is they already tried that D2 transition right with Kim Anderson, and they were really worried about trying it again, which I totally understand. And Gates has really, out of 2-3 years, he's done great.
Yes.
Out of three years. He had that 1 year last year, but they've bounced back, and look what they've done this year. So I think if he goes to Iowa, I think it would be a great move for Iowa.
And I'll say for Mizzou fans, I would buckle up for that for the entire tenure of Dennis Gates' career, because Dennis Gates is active in the transfer portal every year.
My goodness, he is so good at that.
But that's the risk you take, right? That is the dice that you roll every year. Dennis Gates is a believer in the transfer portal. Sometimes it's going to work. Like this year, it worked. In year one, it worked. And then you're going to have years where you think you have all the right pieces, and it just, the puzzle doesn't come together.
And injuries really affected last year. I mean, Tanjay was on this team last year, and it was injured throughout the whole year.
Right.
So I think Tamar Bates has been a big hit, and he stayed for
Caleb Grill.
And Caleb Grill was injured last year.
Yep.
So, like, those two sticking around even after last year just shows how much of a community or, like, a atmosphere Gates brings to Mizzou.
Yeah, and he hit on some guys this year in the portal with Tony Perkins and Mark Mitchell, who have completely changed the fabric of that team.
Who are going to be huge for Thursday's game.
Yes, they will. 913-586-7965 is our number. Good Lord, we went incredibly long on that segment. That's all right. We got some more to talk about here tonight on the program, including some movie news. Happy Gilmore 2, trailer revealed. Might talk a little bit about that. The Missouri women's basketball program has hired a head coach, and Aaron Rodgers is doing himself no favors, irritating potential suitors right now across the NFL. We'll talk about that coming up here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside JT Noah on 96.5 The Fan. Of teams across the NFL anxiously await the decision of Aaron Rodgers. What's he going to do? Where is he going to go? Is it Pittsburgh? Is it Minnesota? Is it New York? Giants. He's not going back to the Jets. Just thought I'd clarify. I'll tell you one person who is not happy to be sitting around waiting to see what happens. Cam Hayward. He was on the Not Just Football podcast, which is his podcast. Too many pro athletes have podcasts. I'll just say that straight out. Who said on Tuesday, said today during the podcast release, he said, quote, "I ain't doing the darkness retreat. I don't need any of that crap. Either you want to be a Pittsburgh Steeler or you don't. It's that simple. That's the pitch. If you want me to recruit, that's the recruiting pitch. Pittsburgh Steelers. If you want to be a part of it, so be it. If you don't, no skin off my back." That doesn't sound like a guy who's overly anxious to be teaming up with Aaron Rodgers. Just a dude who's ready to go. Yeah, he said, "I just want to play football. I'm tired of talking about the quarterback situation. I'd rather have it done. I don't know what ends up happening. I'm ready to move on into free agency. There's just too much going on." Typical Aaron Rodgers. He's got to drag out the process and soak up every bit of possible attention that anybody is willing to give him. And apparently that includes me. I just gave Aaron Rodgers and his moronic set up situation 2 minutes of my time that it didn't deserve. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll take a quick break here, come back and give you more as we approach the end of our show here on this Tuesday night after hours with Logan Weber and JT Noah on 96.5 The Fan. Well, for college football athletes who enjoyed seeing themselves in College Football 25, they're going to enjoy seeing themselves even more in College Football 26. At least that's the way it sounds. According to an article from USA Today, EA Sports has announced that they are going to be raising the payment to athletes who opt in to have their name, image, and likeness portrayed in the upcoming College Football 26 video game from $600 last year to $1,500. Now, they will still receive a deluxe edition copy of the game, which is what they got this past year as well, but it's going to be an extra $900 from what they got this season. Now, here's what I'm struggling with. So at $600 a piece, they paid out roughly 11,000 athletes, right? They gave money to roughly 11,000 players to be included in College Football 25. So that's about $5.5 million that they paid out. This year, it's going to be around the same number of athletes, 11,000 roughly. Now it's $1,500. So it's a leap from about $5.5 million in terms of total payments to about $16.5 million. There were 2.8 million copies of this video game sold at launch back in July of last year. This game is $60. So $60 times 2.8 million at launch. The game made $168 million at launch.
I was one of those people.
I was also one of those people. Okay. I was on vacation in Costa Rica and had pre-ordered the video game. It came out while I was still on vacation, but I did not put the dates together when I had pre-ordered it. So my best friend and I actually had both pre-ordered the video game, not realizing that we were going to be going on a trip to Costa Rica with our wives.
So you didn't bring your system?
Do you think if I would have brought my system to Costa Rica, I could still call my wife?
Probably not.
Come on, big dog. Listen, you know, I get away with a whole lot. My wife is very good to me. I don't think I could have got away with that one. No. That would have been an argument. I said it to her as a joke one time. My best friend and I said it to both of our wives. We were all four of us were hanging out. I said the joke out loud. It was well received by only one of the other three people in the room. Let's just say
that. And I bet it was the same gender as you.
Yeah. It was only well received by one of us. And then I briefly thought, like, what if I just like snuck it into my bag? And then I thought better of it. I don't know how much we even would have played it, to be honest, because we were on an all-inclusive resort. We were with a big group of people. There were like 30 of us that were in the group that all went on vacation together. And we had so many things going on. We were out at the pool every day. We were down on the beach and playing sand volleyball, you know, and we went early morning kayak. There were just so many things that we went and did where we were never in our hotel rooms. The only time we went to our hotel rooms was to shower and change our clothes before we went to dinner. Like, that was it. You ate lunch by the pool. You had your pool clothes on in the morning when you went to breakfast. And that was about it. You went home, went back to the hotel room, showered, changed your clothes, went to dinner, went out and did whatever you went and did that night, and then went back to your room and went to sleep. So, not sure how much I would have played it. Probably a lot the day it came out, and that would have been a rough one. That would have been a tough day for the two of us as we are sitting in a hotel room playing video games on Costa Rican Wi-Fi in this exotic place on this nice vacation in this all-inclusive resort, and we are cooped up in a hotel room all day.
You might have been the popular one if you brought it with you. You might have been the one, hey, everyone's coming to the hotel room, hold up.
Hey, I'm that guy. We got a college football 25 tournament working up here, so you're gonna give us a minute. Yeah, don't worry. We're collecting, you know. We're collecting money at the door. We're, you know, people got to pay, you know, $10 to get into the tournament, $5 to come in and watch. You know, we got a gate coming in. We're gonna walk out of Costa Rica with more money than we walked in.
I remember when it came out, because I had my girlfriend's best friend. I was like, hey, you can hang out with her, do something with her. And so after work, they went and did stuff, and my girlfriend goes, man, I was occupied all day. And I go, me too, man. I had a date with my TV and console. I was totally fine.
Yeah, I ended up, because my brother and my dad didn't have PlayStation 5s yet. They both do now, but at the time that the game came out last year, they didn't have a PS5. And so they had no way of playing the game other than my console. So when my wife and I went to Costa Rica, of course, we were still living in Springfield at the time, but we flew out of KCI and we stayed at my in-law's house, and they drove us to the airport. So what I did was I just left my console at my parents' house. And so that way my brother could just come over to the house and he and my dad could just play the PS5. So my dad and my brother played College Football 25 on my PlayStation before I got to.
So what you're saying is you were a good family member.
I guess so. I was a good guy. And what that helped me do was, as soon as we got back to Kansas City on our flight back, I was able to play it. So that was kind of a twofold approach for me, because we were staying in Kansas City for a few extra days after we got back from Costa Rica. So I still had my console there. I didn't just leave it down in Springfield. Somebody in the text line says you should still take it for Hulu, Netflix, Peacock, etc. That's honestly a pretty good call, because we didn't have any of that down in Costa Rica. We had like local television. They had a few like English speaking channels, but they were like TNT and stuff. So like one night, my wife and I ordered a bunch of room service because I had a catastrophic injury that took place when we were in Costa Rica. I'll tell that story in a little bit. We just kind of hung out in our hotel room and we ordered a bunch of food. And for some reason, one of these TNT channels was in English and they were having a Harry Potter marathon. So we just sat and watched like the first three or four Harry Potter movies that day because I was having trouble walking. And I'll tell this story briefly without a break. The stupidest injury that's ever happened to me in my life. I've been playing sports since I was 4 years old. I have worked for guttering and siding companies. I've done roofing work before. I've cut down tree. I have done a lot more dangerous tasks in my life than what this was. I hurt myself on a water slide.
A water slide?
A water slide. A children's water slide at that.
Stop making it worse.
At this resort in Costa Rica, there was this water slide. And it was, you know, it was sort of, it was maybe 100 feet top to bottom. And it had a couple of little bends and twists in it. And like the second to last day that we were there, we had been at the pool all day. I'll admit it. We were pretty hammered at that point, right? It was 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. We've been at the pool since 9 a.m. It's an all-inclusive resort.
You're over 21. Okay.
Alcoholic drinks flying left and right. So we decided, hey, you know what would be a good idea? Let's go down the water slide. We're like, okay. So we get up there, and like the first time we all go individually, and we're like, yeah, that was fun. We go back up again. Mind you, no lifeguard. There's nobody patrolling the top of this water slide. At one point, there was like an 8-year-old girl who was more or less the lifeguard of this thing, and she was telling people when to go and telling people when to stop. She didn't work there. She was just some 8-year-old kid on a vacation with her family who decided she was going to take it upon herself to be the slide police. And we weren't listening to her. I was like, you're 8 years old. I'm 26. I think I know better than you.
And I'm a little hammered.
I'm an adult. Don't tell me what to do. And so the second time down, we all sort of like, you know, we went, you know, we lined up, we locked our legs together, and we all went down at once. And then the third time we go down, we're like, let's stagger. So somebody go, about a second later, somebody else go, and then somebody else go, and we'll see if we can meet up with each other in the slide and hit the pool, the bottom of the pool at the same time. So I go down first because I'm the smallest and therefore I generate less speed down the slide. A buddy of ours goes second, and then my best friend goes third. My best friend is about 6'4". He's big, tall dude. So we all three go down. And like I said, I'm the smallest of the group of us. I'm 5'9", 150 pounds or whatever. But we don't meet up in the slide. So I hit the water first by myself. And it's about 4 foot of standing water, right? So I hit the water and I go to pop up out of the water. And so I've got all this pressure off my legs and I'm popping up right as my buddy, who's about 200 pounds, lands on my shoulders. Like his butt and hip, like just bam, like almost like it was like a perfect, I was picking him up for a piggyback ride. So all 200 pounds of him is going with downward force as the 150 pounds of me is generating all of this upward force, and it just compresses my spine. Just, I mean, like my whole lower back tightened. I had to like army crawl myself out of this small little pool. I thought I was paralyzed. Like I couldn't, I mean, my legs, my back hurt so bad. My legs were numb. I had to crawl myself out because every time I tried to use my legs, I got this excruciating pain down my back. And so I'm laying there like struggling to breathe. Everybody initially thought it was a joke. They come to check on me and, you know, 2 or 3 minutes pass by. I've got my breath. I'm still panicking. I don't want to move my legs because I'm scared of what just happened. Worst pain I've ever felt in my life. And this dad comes walking up to us and he was probably, I would say, like mid to late 30s. He's probably about 10 years older than I was. He walks up to me and he goes, hey buddy, are you all right? And I had my head on the concrete, right? I'm just laying there panicking, thinking about the fact that my wife's going to have to wheel me around for the rest of my life. And I look up at this dude and the only thing I could say in that moment was, my wife's going to be pissed. So eventually I was able to kind of muster myself up with enough courage to start walking, and it hurt. Every individual step hurt. I had like, you know, I had the hunchback going and the whole nine yards. We get down closer to the pool and I try to play it off like it didn't happen, right? I'm like, I'm trying to make it seem like it didn't hurt. Don't want my wife to panic in the whole nine yards. She sees me take about 3 steps and goes, what happened? Oh, I didn't play that off very well. So I had to explain the whole story to her, and therefore, that's why we ended up in the hotel for an entire day eating food and watching Harry Potter movies, because I almost paralyzed myself on a children's water slide.
That's a great story.
Be safe out there, folks. Somebody said iconic. Yeah, be safe out there, man. I'm telling you. Be safe out there. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll take our final break here, come back, and wrap up the show here tonight on this Tuesday edition of After Hours. Logan Weber alongside JT Noah on 96.5 The Fan. Oh, this is the last thing I need. The last thing I need on earth right now is for North Carolina to suddenly find the top 25 team that they were at the beginning of the year and make a run to like a damn Sweet 16. I do not need it, man. Carolina is up 29-13 at the moment against San Diego State in their first four matchup between two 11 seeds. The Aztecs are shooting an abysmal 5 of 19 from the floor. They are 2 of 10 from the three-point line. They are being out-rebounded 12-7. They've got 2 assists on 5 made shots. Carolina's got 6. They have got 6 turnovers already in this game. Tar Heels have the same. I don't need this, man. Hey, I don't need to see it.
You want to know the funny news about this?
What?
Is San Diego State's a quad 2 game. So it's not even a quad 1 game. Oh,
that's phenomenal, dude. Still not even a quad 1 win for the Tar Heels.
Not a quad 1 win.
But dude, this is the last thing I need is to see Carolina win this game by like 30.
Oh, yeah.
And then end up getting into that 6-11 matchup and winning that. And now they got to face a 3 seed against winnable. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Very winnable game. And then all of a sudden, North Carolina, this team we were making all this fuss about, is all of a sudden smack dab in the middle of a championship run and they're in the Sweet 16. Yeah.
Did you see that they had flight problems getting to Dayton, Ohio? So they had mechanical problems with their flight. And under the comment section, there was multiple people saying that flight was just quad one game. They couldn't get it.
Just couldn't get past it. The pilot was like, wait, what? North Carolina's going to Dayton. What for? Oh, the NCAA tournament? They don't deserve that.
This is a quad one flight. You can't get on it.
Get off my flight. And that'll do it. Get off our radio dial. No, I'm just kidding. Stick around. We've got more coming up here. That's going to do it for After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber. My producer, JT Noah. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back here tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Jay Binkley will be on, bringing you all the latest here on 96.5 The Fan. We out.